Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. The guest is Ed Byrne. It's a cracker. We're recording more of these for Series 12. Thank you very much if you back the Kickstarter. It's all happening. Here's the guests. On October the 16th, you'll be able to see me talking to Ellie Taylor, plus to be announced. On the 23rd, you'll be able to hear me talking to Armando Iannucci and someone else. On the 30th of October, you'll be able to see me talking to Jan Ravens and someone else. On the 6th of November, who knows, could be anyone. The 13th of November, Reg D. Hunter and another person. 20th of November, Richard Osman and another person. 27th of November, I don't know. No one knows. No one knows who that's going to be, but it'll be someone amazing. If you want to buy tickets to come and see that, that would be fantastic. It's a great evening, and you get to hear all the bits that get cut out, like the couple of quite long stories in this particular podcast. Go to richardherring.com/gigs and you can see all the links, or head to the leicestersquaretheatre.com website and you can find the link that way as well. Anyway, let's sit back and enjoy what's left of Rehearsalpa with Ed Byrne. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who now lives in the countryside and loves the way that that turns his whole life into an action film. It's Richard Herring! Welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was on the set of Cheggers Plays Pop the other day. It's still going, it's just, they've got the same, it's a very old Keith Chegwin and some of the kids who just never got home. There's a lot of those in the BBC in the 1970s, and don't blame me, I don't do anything. And they call it Rehearsalpa, so I don't know. They might catch on, who knows. And yeah, I've been living in the country now for 2 weeks. It's nice out there, and I'm living with my in-laws, so it's a little bit weird for the moment while my house isn't ready to move into yet, so that's slightly odd. But I do quite like, because now when I travel, I have to use trains now. And you used to be on the tube. It's like, you lot go on the tube, don't you? But I have to go on trains, and they're at very specific times, the trains. And so it makes your life really exciting because you think, I can get to that. There's half an hour between each train, so there's some jeopardy, right? If you're close to the time your train is going, I was in Angel the other day and I was like 20 minutes to the next train. I thought, will I be able to get the bus to King's Cross in time? It was like, honestly, it was like being in 24 or something. It was really. And then the bus stopped for a bit and the bus driver said, I'm sorry, we've been told to hold here. And they said, oh no. And then I got to King's Cross with like 3 minutes till the train time, and I ran across the concourse. People were getting in the way. It's honestly, it's a. Have you seen the film Sliding Doors, mate? It's like that. I got the train this time, so it was very. Spoiler alert, if you haven't yet seen that movie. This is bad, isn't it? This is my brand new notebook. Look at that, it's already done that. And the pen's fallen out of it. This is my Tiny Rick notebook. That is weak. From the creators of Rick and Morty, you'd think their notebooks, they'd have more pride in their notebooks. It's very good. New series of Rick and Morty. It'll be out by the time people see this, but to people here. It's a very good show if you haven't seen it. It's on Netflix. You got that? Bit of Netflix. Do you like Netflix and chilling, mate? Do you like that? Yeah? Yeah? Do you want to do that later, you and me? Look, we can only lie beside each other. And we can lie beside each other and touch ourselves. That's it. That's all that's going to be allowed, though. You can just sneak out. Do a little bit of that. So, sorry, I'm just flirting with the audience. So, thank you. Let's crack straight on with the show. My guest this week, I hope he's ready. He wasn't there when I went off just now. He's probably best, he's another person who's best known for his appearance on Street Cred Sudoku, that so far all the people who asked about don't even remember it existing. Will you please welcome Ed Byrne, ladies and gentlemen, it's Ed Byrne. Hopefully. Is he there? He's not there. Here he, look at that. Wow, he did the switcheroo on me. Come on in, sit down. What's the surprise?
I realised, just as you said my name, I was sitting behind the wrong door. that's the exit door for the dressing room. There is, funnily enough for a theatre, there's actually another way on to the stage.
Yeah, you could come on back
from
there.
Backstage, other than going into the audience. I should know that. I did a run. I did like a run of five gigs here. I have performed here. I should know how to get to the fucking stage.
But it would have been polite of me to point it out beforehand. We were having a nice time chatting backstage. We didn't have time to...
Well, you would assume, having been here before, it's not a massive theatre. It's that there isn't that Spinal Tap moment of running around underneath us trying to find the... But yeah, anyway, I'm on the stage now.
There we go.
There's a whole... Oh, I had a... Here's a funny thing happened on the way to the stage.
So do you remember being in Street Cred? I can never say Sudoku.
Street Cred Sudoku was the name of the... Yes, it was a terrible show. It was on what was then called UK Gold? What is now Dave, I think.
Yes, I think you might be right.
It was absolute dog shit, made by people who'd never made a panel show before. I had no idea how to make one. We literally just wanted to make a panel show that had the word Sudoku in the title because there was a scramble. Do you remember when Sudoku first arrived? It was massive. And they just wanted anything that was in any way tangentially connected to it. And so it was shit.
Yeah, but it was Street Cred, though. Anything that calls itself Street Cred is not a good sign.
It was various questions about celebrities, and then if you got it right, it revealed another square on the Sudoku puzzle. And so people at home could play along with the Sudoku puzzle if they were, like, completely devoid of a life. That was a thing that they could do. But everything about it was terrible, including the fact that there was no fucking audience on the day we were supposed to record. There was no audience. And, oh, the audience haven't shown up. The audience company has let us down. I couldn't... Is it bring your child to work today? Is there any adults in charge here? And then I had to go and do an interview to promote us, and I didn't even know, and I went on some, I think it was LBC or BBC London or one of those, and they were having a discussion about Sudoku, and they thought I was coming on to defend the trend and the popularity of Sudoku as a phenomenon, despite never having done a Sudoku in my life, and I thought I was there to promote a television programme. And we'd both been lied to, and it led to a very awkward interview.
Yeah.
So you thought you were just thinking, I'll just dig up a really obscure part of his past. But no, you've actually unearthed a very difficult time for me.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I like about those. It's a bit like my appearance on This Week by the sound of it. So, yay. They changed it at the last minute. Anyway, never mind. Let's
the other
move
thing
on
that sticks in my head is when it was being explained to me what it was like, what the show was about. The woman who was doing it over the phone to me pronounced the word round, as in the next round, as rind, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then the next rind. Peeling something?
But let's talk for a little bit. Let's talk for a little bit about TV quiz shows, because I haven't done that this series, and you've been in loads of them. And I love that you've been there. You raised the the Chase. You got created the highest amount of money into the bank.
Brought back. I don't know if you know how the Chase works.
Of course, they know how the Chase works.
I'm guessing people who've paid money for a podcast recording know how a quiz show works. I'm going out on a limb there. Yes, I brought back the record amount of money, both celebrity and non-celebrity, from the Chase or to back to the behind the desk.
£117,000. Yeah. I didn't know if it could go that high.
Yes, but unfortunately, it was myself and Eric Bristow. And I'm not going to say I carried him. I didn't do great anyway, but there was a few times where just out of politeness I went, I won't buzz on this one. Let's give Eric a go. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. There was a golf question and he buzzed and fucking stood there. Like, I nearly went, pass! So, yeah, we didn't do that well. No, we only got like 12 or 13 or... It was probably 11. I bet it was 11. I genuinely don't remember, but the fact that I said it was 12 or 13... Probably 11.
Yeah. Does it still hurt? Because when I've been on these things and that's a big success and then an annoying failure.
Yeah.
Does it still hurt?
No, I felt I did what I could do.
Yeah.
But I was quite pleased with how the whole day went, really.
Yeah.
Nadine Dorries was also on.
Really?
And didn't make it back behind the desk.
That's good. That's good news.
Not that clever.
Which chaser were you up against?
The governess, who's actually really nice. Anne Hegarty.
Yeah, she does seem nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I prefer Pointless, but you've been on Pointless.
I've been
well.
On Pointless twice. Didn't get to the final either time. I've got to the head to the head. Oh man, so annoys me.
Yeah.
You've really
I've done it three times. The third one hasn't even been shown. We did it nearly a year ago. It's so annoying that I can't reveal that we didn't win again. So that's it's a really good one. I don't know why I think they're holding on to it because this was just such a good episode.
My Achilles heel is the memories of my quiz shows.
Yeah.
I love quiz shows.
Yeah, me too.
I do them because I watch them and being on them is like crawling into the television. It's like I love it. And I think I'm good at them when I'm watching them. And then I go on them and I never win. And it really haunts me every time.
It's the same with me.
I was on Mastermind. I came third out of four. Third!
Weak. I got the highest ever.
John Bishop came fourth. Can I just point out?
I got the highest ever celebrity score on Mastermind and still lost because then the next person got the highest score.
Who was that? That wasn't Mark Watson, was it?
No, it wasn't Mark Watson. It was I've forgotten and Hillary Kay from Antiques Roadshow. Who did Antiques? I'm not going to go on about it. I'm not going to keep going on about it. He did Antiques. They can't do Antiques if you're an Antiques. Can't do it.
Well, all I said when I did Mastermind, I wanted to do Prince as my chosen specialist subject, and Beverly Knight was already doing Prince,
right,
as her chosen specialist subject. so I had to pick something else.
Yeah.
I picked the Star Trek movies.
Oh,
and I thought it was very unfair. They did two questions about Star Trek Nemesis, which was the shittest Star Trek film, which even I, as a fan of the Star Trek movies, couldn't get to the fucking end of. And they did two questions about it.
Right,
not fair. And then the first time I did Pointless,
yeah,
got into the head-to-head, and the one I lost it on to the fucking what's his name?
Yeah, I know him. Barry, it was Barry Chuckle.
You know the horse racing commentator with the hat, the fat guy,
John McCririck. Oh my god!
And his wife, who is not a celebrity. Can I just quite? My wife wanted to go on Pointless with me and couldn't get away. Well, honey, they're not going to take you. You're not a celebrity. So I was on with Lucy Porter, who's very clever and very useful to be on. But he gets to go on with his wife.
Yeah.
So I got that in the neck from my wife when I got home. And it was name a dance troupe from Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
And he said Pants People.
Yeah.
And I said Hot Gossip.
That was a bad
mistake. We're not on Top of the Pops.
That was Kenny Everett show.
They were on Kenny Everett show. They
should have gone for Legs and Coach.
Legs and Coach. Lucy said Legs Limited or something they were called. Oh. They went, no, it's Legs and Coach. Well, I didn't even get the name right, so that's going to be more obscure. And I should have said Zoo. That's what I should have said.
There's some more. And there was one between.
They don't even remember.
I can't even remember the word.
So that haunts me.
John McCrick's a fucking idiot as well. I played poker against him, and he had the best possible hand that you could have unfolded on it. He basically had a royal flush. He had the best thing that was possible from the table.
Always got to keep your opponents guessing. He's a wild man.
He was going on before I know that women couldn't play poker, and then he was knocked out by a woman after folding the nuts.
However, I did win 30 grand on Family Fortunes.
Yes, well, I was going to ask about Family Fortunes. You've done Family Fortunes and Mr. and Mrs.
Yeah.
30 grand, you don't get to keep that though, did you?
No, they went to charity. Went to a charity that then got exposed as being a really corrupt charity. Seriously, Google it. There was a charity in Ireland called Console, who were this suicide bereavement charity, and it turned out they were fucking driving around in brand new Audi Q9s and shit like that. And it was a big scandal. And I raised a lot of money that person went up some dude's nose. Yeah.
Thank God they didn't get the 117,000. Thank God you lost the chase. Good. I'm delighted you've done. You know, that's good. You've won one. I've never won one on TV.
But I tell you what, my sister won it. Like when we did the thing at the end. I mean, it was a team effort. But my sister won it. She got four of the top five answers.
But you know, Family Fortunes is really easy. It's like Pointless for Idiots. Pointless.
No, because here's what's different with Family Fortunes compared to Pointless is that with Pointless, if your answer is wrong, boom. You know, that's it. On Family Fortunes, even if the answer is wrong, it still counts. So, just so long as people have said it in answer to the question. So, one of the questions was, what's another word for rich?
Yeah.
I don't mean like dick or... Yeah. But, rich. No, I said another derivation of rich. As in richer, as in,
I see.
So, it was... people were suggesting, wealthy, loaded, etc. And the one that none of us guessed... was well off, because it's not a fucking word. It's two words, but it doesn't matter, you see. So that's how you have to second guess the stupidity of the people answering the question. Because that's right. People might get the question wrong, and I have to guess maybe when somebody's answered, can you name a country behind the Iron Curtain? Maybe they will have said Ireland. You don't know.
Have you ever done Celebrity Tipping Point?
Yeah.
Have you? Oh man, I so want to do
that. Got all the questions right, virtually just shit on the machine.
Yeah.
Didn't have a thing.
There's an element of luck in it.
But no, I did it. I lost it on that. We really are. We're going through it. It's the quizzes. The question that I lost it on was, when I say lost it, I mean I tore the set apart and trashed it out. The word pulmonary refers to what organ of the body?
The pulmonary artery.
Well, the
lungs.
It's the lungs.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was the fact that they said organ and not organs through me. And I said heart, which is wrong, obviously.
Yeah.
It's lung. That did me.
Did you have to do the bit where Ben Shepherd goes, what do you think is going to happen now? And then you go, I know, it's probably going to go in the Ben it's random, Shepherd. Isn't it? So don't know yet. And should we just wait and see what happens, Ben? Rather than discussing
it. Ben Shepherd is a lovely man.
He's great.
He really, really is good. But he really has. I hats off doing that show. I think he could literally narrate paint drying. If he can do that, if he can turn that into, that one went a bit quick. Ooh, it's gone to the left. Well, it was one of two ways it was going to go, Ben. Three, if you count, not going either to the left or right. No, he is. The one always got me, and I never did, I don't know if they ever did a celebrity. Oh, they did a celebrity version of, what's the fucking open in the box one?
Deal or No Deal.
They did do. I sounded like such an old man there. What's that opening the box on? But that one is the one. That Noel Edmonds on that. That's the things he comes out with.
Yeah.
Oh, you're playing a very clever game. No, they are literally picking boxes at random. There is nothing to this other than going, no, I'm a bit greedier than that, I'm afraid. Nothing else going on.
I went in for a meeting. I think I've revealed this story before, but I wanted to do a late night version of Deal or No Deal, where they just replayed Deal or No Deal and had mathematician experts
commentating over the top of it, yeah. Like they do on poker. Yeah. So going, is this
well,
true?
The odds of that are.
Yeah. Is this true? What Noel's saying? No, it's not. There's no evidence that box 22. As we look back through the whole history of it, it evens out as about average.
But isn't there that really curious mathematical conundrum where the game show thing of if you're given three boxes and one of them's got the prize and the other two don't,
yeah,
and if you pick one and it's not the prize, if you're then offered the option of switching your choice,
yeah,
so you pick A, B, or C, and you go, I think it's behind C, and then they open A first and it's not behind A,
yeah,
and then they say you now have the choice of swapping your original answer. It actually mathematically is that if you swap, there's a greater chance of winning. Now that I have had it explained to me several times, I still can't get my head around it. That blows my fucking. And I think maybe Noel understands that. And I don't. And maybe the people who've had that unlocked for them, Deal or No Deal, is an absolute game of chess.
Yeah. It's the only way to explain his cruelty, because he's very cruel to. Oh dear, you made the wrong choice there. It's just like it comes down to, it doesn't matter what decision you make at which point, if your amount you've got isn't the amount in the end box, you've lost in his opinion.
I don't know. I have found myself watching that show and gotten drawn in. I have to admit, and my wife has walked in on me, and I've been less ashamed if she caught me wanking over cat porn. She actually like, wait, what are you? Are you watching Deal or No Deal?
Yes.
You fucking loser. And I'm like, no, love, seriously, this guy has absolutely horsed it. It's brilliant. He totally should have taken the deal.
Well, I'm the same. So I could have carried on watching that for a long time. Anyway, let's talk about something that isn't. I didn't know you'd done so much acting. I know you've done a bit of acting, but there's some films I did. You won a Best Supporting Actor award.
I won the most obscure award in the acting community. I won. You are looking, ladies and gentlemen, at the winner of what year was it? Do you have like the
I think it's about 2006, maybe something like that.
Even that late?
I haven't got the
2005, 2006. I was the recipient of the Best Supporting Actor at the Monaco International Festival of Nonviolent Film. Yes, as well you should. As well you should. I remember doing the Graham Norton show not long after, and sitting there with Robert Downey Jr. and it was brought up, and it was literally like that scene in Tropic Thunder of 8-time Academy Award winner Kurt Lazarus and MTV Best Kiss Award winner Tobey Maguire.
So you did a film that was for Are You Ready for Love?
Are You Ready for Love, it was called, yes.
Yeah.
With Michael Landon.
Now I know there's no... Michael Landon from Highway to Heaven.
No, Michael Brandon.
Okay. He would have been dead by then. He was long dead.
Michael Brandon from Dempsey and Mick piece.
No wonder it was non-violent if you had the dead bloke from Little House on the Prairie. He'd been dead for 20 years. Yeah, he died quite young, Michael Landon. Michael Brandon. Yeah, he died.
The truth. Okay, my apologies.
He's taken his Highway to Heaven.
Michael Brandon, who's going to be in Edinburgh this year doing the show. Yeah.
But he was Jerry. He did Jerry Springer the Opera, Michael Brandon, for a while. Yeah.
Yes, he did. Yes.
That's
right. Okay, so he was in.
Yeah.
And Andy Nyman.
Oh, yeah.
And Lucy Punch. There were some good people in it, like.
Yeah.
And also Jodie Marsh.
Right. And what about Zeman Overload?
That was actually not a bad little, very low budget independent movie made in Manchester, filmed in 3 weeks. And I was the lead in that, and it went straight to video.
Did it?
To DVD. Straight to DVD. Yes,
it's good to get the lead part.
It was nice. It was actually that was one of the very few things I have done that I wouldn't slag off and say it was absolute shit. it was a nice little film. The ending fizzled a bit.
Yeah,
but I played a writer with obsessive compulsive disorder who couldn't leave the house, who couldn't fly, but had to have a meeting in LA about a script he was writing and stuff, and became obsessed with this a porn star or glamour model called Veronica Zemanova.
Okay.
And because he just gets dumped, and then he Googles some list of the sexiest women in the world, and the number one on this list that comes up is this glamour model called Veronica Zemanova, who's a real person, who I think the director and writer of the film was actually in real life obsessed with. And so he becomes obsessed with her and wants to go out on a date, so writes a film about her.
Yeah.
It's actually quite meta.
Yeah.
Because the actress was supposed to be in it.
Right.
And then cancelled at the last minute.
Yeah, because you got scared.
Probably. Yeah. But it was a good little film.
Oh, we'll look it up on this. Can we get it on Netflix?
No. Not even that.
I
think you could probably still buy it on Amazon.
I don't want to pay for it.
You could if you contact me on Twitter, I will rip my copy and I will, you can get it, you can torrent it.
Right.
Is that what you say? you can use views.
Let's talk a bit about stand-up. You've been stand-up for... Well, I remember seeing you in the probably early 90s. Is that when you started?
I did my first stand-up comedy gig in November the 3rd, 1993.
Really?
Yeah.
And when... Because the first time I saw... I think the first time I saw you, I think I might have met you before, you were doing the Alanis Morissette routine that was a very
strong routine.
Could have
been any time between 1995 and about 2000.
Right. But I think it was quite early on. It was a very... it was a very classic routine, wasn't it?
That's enough. Thank you.
Yeah. And a properly...
I was very happy with it.
Yeah,
it is one of those things where people still say... You know, I meet people and they go,
yeah.
Oh, you're that guy. Yeah, I really like that thing that you did over 20 years ago. So there is it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah,
I was very happy. Do you know what? When the album came out, I bought the album.
Yeah.
And I had an argument about that song. The song, ironic, before it was even released,
right.
I had these feelings about it.
Yeah.
And I argued about it with friends of mine at the time. And through the course of these arguments, that routine basically got written.
Right.
And I remember him saying, like, being funny in conversation. Like, as most, I don't know about you, your process, most of your best bits, a lot of times, they come out of just stuff you're saying in conversation. And you go, I'll remember that and turn it into routine. And I remember going, it's obscure, it's an album track on this album that's just been released by some woman who used to be a popstrel in Canada, you know. So when the song then was released and was not just a hit but massive,
yeah.
I had like a ready form dream almost waiting.
it was the
most topical I've ever been. I had written the joke before the event took place. So that was great, and it was part of it is like that whole timing thing. Like if Live at the Apollo or the Rutherford had been around at the time, and the likes of us had been doing it at the time, it would have been great to do that routine like once, bang on TV on a really big. But it was like I did it on the stand-up show, which got like maybe a million people, and then I did it somewhere else. And so it kind of filtered out. Eventually, over the period of about 3 years, people eventually that routine just got round.
Yeah.
You know. So it would have been nice if it had just gone out bang in one hit.
Yeah. Poof,
but
yeah. So I regret
how good my old routines are.
But it felt like it was like, you know, you when I saw you were a new comic and you had just this fully formed, brilliantly kind of worked out routine about this subject. So it was just, you know, I was going to say it must feel like a bit of I was going to say a double edged sword myself, but it's isn't that ironic?
I look back and I know, like, some of it I kind of cringe. Some of it, look at it, I'm very whiny about her.
Right.
I'm quite sort of I'm all like, oh, you whining cow, you moaning binge and all this. And I'm a bit. It just now I look at it and I go, oh, that's a bit. You don't need to be that nasty about her.
No, sure.
You know what I mean?
I
do look back at it now and go, you could have just attacked the lyrics without having to come across like quite such a boorish individual.
It was a different time.
It was the 90s. It was considered ladsy, not misogynist.
It is, that's, you know, we were talking backstage, but when I did all my shows, admittedly from the mid-2000s onwards, it's, you know, it is, there's some jokes that you go, oh, you know, in a Twitter... In the Twitter generation, I would, even though I can defend that joke, I wouldn't want that joke to go out now because someone would go, And just take it as a tweet and say, oh, he said this, with it outside of the context of the show. You know?
It is weird how things age. Like, yeah. I got a grief from a guy because the routine I had about getting married, which I did when I hosted Live at the Apollo, it got repeated recently. And when I did it first, gay marriage was not a thing. You know, it wasn't a thing that one could do. And now it is. It slightly dates the material. But this guy accused me of being homophobic. Because I hadn't seen into the future. and a routine that was written 5 years before gay marriage was legal and performed on TV about 3.5 years before it was legal, didn't take into account that men could marry men. You know? Yeah.
You should have seen it coming.
Yeah.
In every sense. I'll ask you an emergency question.
Lulled? Has it lulled?
No, I just feel
did
like
I talk too seriously about the mechanics of comedy there?
No, that's all good, I like that. I'll ask you this question. We're talking about twirls backstage, I hope that won't...
I think we were backstage talking about twirls.
I hope that won't influence your answer to this question.
We're talking about twirls backstage.
If you had to be anally violated by a popular chocolate bar, you had to be... Which chocolate bar would you like inserted in your anus?
With absolutely no hesitation, I would say a flake.
Flake, yeah.
Just because it would probably fall apart before it actually penetrated particularly deeply. Like, flake versus my arse, my arse will win. You know what I mean? If you... I don't want a Lion bar fresh from the freezer. That would hurt.
Might be nice. I had a double-decker the other day, and not on my arse.
No.
Just in my mouth. It's been a while since I've eaten one of those. I'd forgotten what was inside.
Double-deckers are not... There's not a lot of substance to a double-decker.
It's not nice. I'd forgotten what it was. I thought it might be like a sort of picnic or something, but it's like a chew, really.
It's two decks of not very much. It's like a slightly shitty nougat on top of basically a Rice Krispie bun. Yeah.
Wouldn't like that.
Get fucked, right? Double-deckers are for losers, and you're wrong if you disagree.
I'm amazed they're still going.
Losers chocolate.
All right, I'll ask you this one.
I love getting needlessly angry at things. Like I love completely and utterly overreacting to something absolutely pointless. You know, I prefer a picnic. That's because you're a cunt. Kind of a fucking arsehole likes picnics. Get the fuck out of my house.
It's really... You have a point, though. They are weird. All right, what about this? Question 496, if you're following at home. Do you think you've cried more tears or created more sexual juices in your lifetime? And would you appreciate some afterlife It's a Knockout dipstick affair to settle the question in heaven?
I would very much appreciate the afterlife after Knockout, and I'd like it, like I would like it brought up at like what year each was created.
Yeah.
Like I'd love to see, like you just because obviously the first 18 years, it's just tears, right? That's it,
and a lot.
Yeah, with like a little bit of. Is my own included, by the way, the sexual juices?
Yes, your own sexual juices.
Oh yeah, okay. So
there'll be a bit, maybe 30.
Yeah,
12.
Yeah, but I'd like to see it year by year. That would be fascinating.
Well, if God exists, I'm sure he can make that dream come true.
But I think just by the sheer, I mean, how much do you cry when you even cry?
No, I mean not a lot
compared to how much you know.
Well, there's not. I mean, as you get older, there's less of that, isn't there? There's more. More
but
tears.
You know,
you're crying about how little spunk you're producing.
I've never found myself going, "Oh, I better tidy up in here. I've been crying too much." My wife has never come home after she's been away. Here we go. Have you been crying in here?
Maybe with ladies it might be an more interesting question, but it's hard to quantify, isn't it? That's why it'd be interesting to know the answer. I'll ask you about have you ever met Brian Blessed? That's what I was going
to
ask.
No, I've never met Brian Blessed, and I'd love to. I enjoy his work very much. I enjoy his attitude to life. I enjoy you know, it's all well and good people coming up and going, I liked your Lance Morissette routine, but he's still going, Gordon's alive. I mean, he's still doing it. If you ask him, he'll do it.
I'm hoping to get him on this, but I've failed so far. But
you'd only need the one microphone.
Now, I wanted to ask about this, which is information on your website, that you are 3.2% Neanderthal.
Oh, yeah.
Is that true?
I did, one of the many television shows I was on that Darragh O'Brien hosts. Which was, he did a show called Science Club.
Oh, yes,
and,
yes.
And they did in the first series, they had a thing where they had various celebrity doing little pieces to camera or video clips. It's a very simple term that you're searching for it. And it was interesting. We have certain genetic markers that tell us how Neanderthal we are.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just did a test. It was one of those 23andMe, you know, genetic things. So, yeah, I'm about 3%, which was we more than him.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a lot.
9%. You would look at us and you would think he was definitely more Neanderthal than us. You would just assume that.
Yeah.
But no, and I don't even know how much the general population is.
3% sounds like a lot. Because there was a time when, like, not that long ago, people didn't think that humans and Neanderthals actually interbred. But then that's so it's quite a modern thing to...
Yeah, and there's still a discussion as to how violent the interbreeding was.
Yeah.
That is the slight downer of the discussion. When I was doing the actual scientific research about it and interviewing people at the Natural History Museum, they were like... Basically, they're going, yeah, well, we're not really sure if it all seemed a bit rapey, basically. And it was that thing of, basically, I was trying to get a scientist to say, look, were we raping the Neanderthal, or were the Neanderthal raping us? Well, tell us which. And it's like, well, the jury's out on that one.
I reckon we were raping them.
They're bigger than us.
Yeah, but they're not around anymore, so I suggest we dominated them in some way.
Maybe we dominated them to get revenge on them for all the raping. Maybe we're like, you know what?
We have to get rid of these guys.
Keep them sexually violating us. I think we should wipe them out. Now, who said rape can't be funny? Everybody, and we proved them right.
I noticed you've been rubbing pork on your Twitter feed recently.
Yes, I have been. But yes. This is the extent of your research.
Yeah, now I've looked on your Twitter.
I'm just going to look at what he's been tweeting about.
Yeah.
Oh, you've been cooking some pork. I'll ask him about that.
Yeah.
I do. I swing.
Yeah.
My Twitter is. It can be. Occasionally, I'll come up with a very funny joke on Twitter.
Yeah, this
one. And occasionally, I'll get into an argument with a beloved children's celebrity for Nick and Jokes. Or occasionally I will tweet the most mundane fucking things alive.
Hey, it didn't look like mundane.
I am
nice.
Cooking pork. I live tweeted my own barbecuing of meat last week, and I took photographs.
It looked
of
nice.
The,
I saw
of
it.
Meat.
You did some rubbed and some not rubbed.
Yeah, and then wrapped some in foil, and I didn't tweet about it at all.
Okay.
But they was gorgeous.
Yeah,
it looked good. I bought a new smoker. That's basically what the bottom line is.
Yeah.
Right. Should we go back to talking about rape?
Who'd have thought rubbing pork could be more controversial than raping Neanderthals? Either way around. And is it possible? I mean, like, I suppose it is. I think once we're up to Neanderthals, because about 40,000 years ago, I was reading Sarah Pascoe's book. She's on next week. You must come and see the show.
Yeah.
We're the same physiologically as we were as humans 40,000 years ago. So there's no actual difference between, like, your brain and everything. So I think Neanderthals were around 40,000 years ago. Am I right? Neanderthal experts.
Well, that's interesting you said, because we're taller than we were like 100 years ago.
Yeah, but, so... but the brain and everything like that, we would be, you'd be able to, everything's different because you'd been foraging and you would be living terrible lives, and so you wouldn't get as much food. The only reason we're taller is because we have more nutrients and more protein. But 40,000 years ago, there's no difference physically between your brain and your DNA makeup. Well, have it
I'm
out.
Gonna reject, I'm going to reject your facts. And
have it out with Pascoe, is what I'd say to you.
I will.
Yeah, on Twitter.
I had to follow Sarah recently. I have to really quickly finish my at a gig that we were doing our Edinburgh previews together. She was on before me at the Balham Comedy Festival.
Oh yes,
and I've never felt so old, because she is 10 years younger than me, and she went on before me and did a routine about getting old. And you know you're an old comic when you're watching comedians 10 years younger than you doing jokes about getting old. And even the reference she made about getting old in her show was a Harry Potter reference. And I didn't even get it. Like, so like, I don't even get your reference that proves how old you are. That's how fucking old I am. So yeah.
So, well, so
and you're older than me. So
I
you
am.
You must want to kill yourself. Right now. This all...
I've stayed very young at heart by by hanging around with people half my age for a long time. That was the only way to do it. So, let's talk about your show. It's called Spoiler Alert.
Yeah.
So Edinburgh, and then on tour.
Yeah. And I've ruined myself. I gave it that name because it's all about being spoiled and spoiled my kids and how spoiled we are in general as people. Yeah. And I feel like I'm contributing to the era of everybody being spoiled and self. What's the word?
Self-indulgence.
Yes. Yeah. And entitled. Self-entitled.
Oh, entitlement. Yeah.
That's a very simple phrase for a man who talks for a living to just.
Well,
reach
given
for.
It's what your show's about, you should probably.
Yeah.
Know.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I have this thing where it's like, as I'm getting older, I always liken it to just reaching for something that you assume is going to be there, and it just turns out the shelf is a lot further away than you thought it was, and you're just flailing around with your hand in the dark. Yeah. It's like you're sitting in a workshop that you built that you know that thing is there. I can reach behind. Behind my head without even looking, but no, the wall keeps getting further away. it's about being spoiled, but I call it spoiler alert, and it's a very common phrase, clearly.
It is, yeah.
And now I hear it, like you used the phrase just before I went on,
and
it just made my ears prick up.
Yeah,
which it's just one of the things where I feel like I've created a rod for my own back.
Well, but then in a way, it's kind of good to have. It is one of those. Phrases, I think, that people.
That's
a good thing. But then it's. But you know, then people are going to think you can't talk about what's in it because you'll spoil it.
Yeah. So, I also think if somebody writes a bad review, but it's got the word spoiler alert at the top of it, people won't read the review.
Yeah. That is also true of good reviews, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is how long I've been in the business. A good review makes no difference, a bad review makes all of us. Because. Other comedians won't retweet my good reviews.
So you're touring. It's a long tour, so it's through the autumn and the spring.
Yeah.
By the time this goes out, Edinburgh will be over, so there's no point in talking about Edinburgh. But
okay.
But you're
sorry, Edinburgh.
You're doing
that. We've just put you aside like that.
Edinburgh will be gone.
That's an interesting thing about comedians. I always feel if you were from Edinburgh, is there anybody here from Edinburgh by any chance? No. It's just how utterly disrespectful the comedy industry or the comedy fraternity are to the Scotland's capital city. In that when we say Edinburgh, we mean the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
Edinburgh is a large, thriving metropolis. We're full of people who go to work every day and industrious and intellectual and vibrant. And we just think of it as a thing we go to 3 weeks every other year, right? And it just, we will refer to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival as Edinburgh, like to the point we refer to the month of August as Edinburgh. I have used the phrase where I've said, "No, I'm going to be in Melbourne for Edinburgh." Like that's the term I've used. And I just think it must be so disrespectful to people who actually live in Edinburgh that's how we, you know, we're here all year round.
But you know, it cost £4,000 for me to rent a flat there for a month, so fuck them. Fuck those fucking bell ends. It's all right, Edinburgh's finished. It's finished.
See,
it's over.
Edinburgh's finished. The city still exists. This is my point. It has not finished.
Have you been there during the
university
winter?
Is still there. Edinburgh University is still there. People are there. Working.
But we're gone. Festival's not on. Fuck them.
The rudest thing.
Fuck them. About 9 years ago, you said where you'd like to be in 10 years' time.
Oh my God, this is a horrible thing you're doing now.
Living in New Zealand and learning to fly a single-seater plane. How's that going for you? Yeah. You've got a year to do it, mate.
I changed my mind about moving to New Zealand because I had kids. That was it. I did. Me and my wife, I proposed to my wife. I didn't propose to her when she was my wife. It would be a weird thing to do. But when she was my girl, but we got engaged in New Zealand,
right.
And we've been out many times since. We love it there, and yes, 9 years ago, I think that was the plan. We had this whole thing. We're like, we'll go back, and I'll just do fucking anything. Like, I get asked to do I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out Here every year, and I say no every year. And what the fuck, I'm going to do it this year because I'm going to get money. I'll do ads. I'll do fucking any old shit. I don't know. Right now, there's always going, what? You're going to whore yourself more than you already do after that. But I believe it or not, I do say no to things. I was going to say, I'm going to say yes to everything. Let's fucking sell up, and then I'll go into like semi-retirement and we'll move to New Zealand. It was the plan. And then a few years down the line, we created what are essentially two-thirds of my parents' grandchildren.
Yes.
And I feel it's just not right to take them to the other side of the world.
Yeah.
Which now is like, so that's what? England is now looking at me going, well, that's all I was giving you. You're going to be like that, fuck off. But yeah, I just, we were. I was going to just sort of retire and move to New Zealand and do nothing but learn how to fly.
You could do it in another 15 years' time.
Exactly, but it would be, that.
Okay, have you looked into flying lessons?
I did. Yeah. I did it for a bit.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
But again, it's very time consuming, and so are children. Just can't do everything, mate.
No.
Can't do everything. Oh. But yeah, but thank you for bringing up the life I never had.
Have you seen the film Sliding Doors? Because maybe it's a great film. One of my favourite films. You've got two sons.
Any
Kiwis in?
Wait. Hey,
where are you from? Where are you? What? Gonna have to ask
Jellyberg, I think it is. Is that a place? Jellyberg?
Is that a nickname for a place I'm not familiar with?
Give us the capital of New Zealand.
Pardon me? The Viking.
The capital of New Zealand.
Right. Is it called Jellyberg?
Denniburg.
Whereabouts is that? I don't just say New Zealand, because that's not.
Southern Hawke's Bay.
Okay, right. So near Napier?
Hour or so.
Walking or cycling? Wouldn't you love to live in a country where the traffic was so reliable you could describe how far away a place was by how long it took to get there? Wouldn't that be? See, that's why I wanted to move to New Zealand.
By single-seater plane, it's an hour. That's what you're saying, right? That's how everyone gets around in New Zealand. Nice to meet you. Welcome.
I'm very fond of New Zealand, and I've been to New Zealand too many times, and I'm too old to still be amused by how New Zealanders pronounce the word deck. Nothing will make me hoot like a middle-aged man from New Zealand talking about how he's got a great big deck everyone can sit on.
So, talking of your children, your first son was called Cosmo. You named him after Cosmo.
Excellent name. No, fuck you, you're a showbiz wanker.
After Cosmo from Seinfeld.
I named him after Cosmo from Seinfeld. No, because he's a racist.
That's going to be fact out subsequently.
No, I didn't name Cosmo because I liked the name. Okay. Yeah. I think that's a classic example because I think I said it in an interview. Yeah. I made a joke about it, and I wouldn't want it to be construed that I named him after Cosmo Kramer because I hadn't. I didn't want people thinking, oh, he called his kid Cosmo because he's a big Seinfeld fan. And yet, somehow,
because
that has been Chinese whispered across the net too, so you named your kid after Cosmo from Seinfeld.
That's now a fact. I'm going to put that on Wikipedia. Well, I think it might be on Wikipedia. Because then I was going to...
I imagine that's where you got it.
You're doing your exhaustive research. Twitter, IMDb, Wikipedia. It's the holy trinity. That's what you need. Because I was going to say, then I wondered if Magnus... You were a big fan of Magnus Magnusson for your second son.
But you know what? I was a big fan of... That's not why I called him Magnus. But I did... I had a radio show for a little while on what was then called GLR. It's now BBC London Live. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed Magnus Magnusson. And my co-host on my show was my mother. And he flirted like fuck with it. we were like joking. We were after the news, Magnus is going to be flirting with my ma a bit more. And my ma goes, he's not flirting with me. And Magnus goes, yes, I am. And he came out with an absolute corker because Adam Bloom was on as a guest as well. And Magnus Magnusson was plugging his book, which was his memoir, which was called I've Started So I'll Finish.
Yes.
And the book, on the cover, it says, I've started, comma, so I'll finish. And Adam just thought, that comma, he said, that's a bit anal, isn't it? And straight away, Magnus Magnus went, well, it's not a colon. Boom! Boom! Magnus Magnus, top bloke!
Yeah.
But that's not how I named Magnus. I just named Magnus because I love the name. But I did do a gig in Reykjavik recently, and it's so cool to just tell an audience your son's name and get a round of applause.
So that's why, so if you have more kids,
so I go to Reykjavik now. Did I tell you my second son's called Magnus?
You used to write for the Metro. You used to do an article in the Metro every
year. Yeah, then you took over.
Yeah.
You did my cast-off job.
I did it for a long time. And now Dom Jolly does it, so that's how far it's descended now. on your final Metro column, gone deep. You said that you had sat on your own testicle. Was that true, or was that...
I think it was that. Was that the one where I listed all the things that showed that I was getting old?
Yeah.
It was various things, yeah. When you sit on one of your own balls.
Yeah.
I wasn't even naked. I still have to sit there and go, ow! I hurt. Sitting down hurts now. That's a sign the party's over.
Yeah. Mine haven't really got too affected. That people warned me about the low-hanging fruit of becoming an older man.
But I've opened my legs and moved myself down in my chair.
Mine are still fairly, you know, I don't need a ball hammock. They're still fairly up there.
Well, maybe they were never big to begin with. When your balls are as ludicrously massive as mine, Richard.
I'll have you know that my unborn son has balls so big that they were commented on by a lady looking at
them. That is a weird thing. That is the thing that can happen baby boys are born because of the hormones that are happening. You know, the hormones that are happening. It's a medical term. That sometimes boys can be born with fucking massive bollocks. They do, and then they just shrink down again after a few days.
Yeah,
it didn't happen to either of mine, but.
I'll look out for it.
Yeah.
It'll be fun to, you know. It's interesting for a woman, I think, to like that point where you realise you've got a penis in you, like growing inside you. That's got to be weird, right? That's got to be a weird thing. And then coming out and then learning to deal with it.
Yeah,
she's got some surprises coming to. Because you've got both boys, we've got a girl.
Part of me wants to jam with you on this. Part of me wants to just leave you hanging. Let's just see where Richard goes with this.
I found people don't like people discussing the genitalia of non-born children.
I have two boys. I have two boys. My favourite remark about them that I ever made on stage is that one is six, one is five. There's 17 months in the age difference.
Right.
My wife didn't want there to be too big a gap. So she had them both by cesarean. Boom! It's a good joke. It is technically flawless. It's just not a nice joke.
Anything to look out for with they pee in your face? Is that
they're great. My thing, and the thing I've been talking about lately with my kids now is that, and this is all part of the whole spoiling them thing, is like, I mean, first of all, they have English accents, which I find, you know, I'm not saying difficult to deal with. But just as an Irishman and as a dad, you want your children to be a reflection of you, and they're not just English, they're like posh English. So and they say things and they ask for things that we give them, things they only know exist because we've given them. But it just feels weird when my 5-year-old son goes, "Daddy, is there any more elderflower cordial?" Dad, like, you spoiled the shit. Like, it just hurts to hear it, you know. I didn't even know what that was. I swear to God, the first time I had elderflower cordial, I was at a wedding. I was in my 20s, and I went to a wedding where there was no alcohol served.
Yeah.
And they toasted with elderflower. That was the first time I'd come across it. So that kind of thing. And what is nice is we'll take them to Derbyshire, where my in-laws are from, and I feel I'm much happier with that, because they come back from Derbyshire sounding like they're from Derbyshire. They're coming out all like, "Oh, that's buggered." And I find that much easier to deal with. But I swear, one of my favourite moments, this is not a way actor, it was one of my beautiful things, my Cosmo, when he was about 5, we're sitting under a broken table, and he goes, "Things are either jiggered
or buggered. If something is jiggered, it can be fixed. But if it can't be fixed, it's buggered.
And he pointed at the broken down word,
that is what I call buggered.
It's beautiful. But then, you know, within a week, living back in Saffron World, and the accent goes, we need to go back up to the in-laws and top up the accent. Go and hang out with your cousins again.
My dad said buggered. He said, we're buggered for bricks, to his dad, and was beaten for saying buggered to him.
I know it's technically a swear word, but I he's so charming when he says it.
Oh, here's something I wanted to ask you. In October 2000...
I love the way you preface every question with... It's a fucking interview.
It is.
You're supposed to ask.
Here's a good question.
It's a weird thing that you're doing.
Here's an excellent question.
Did you notice how Parkinson never... Can I ask you a question? I don't mean to be rude, but I'm curious about something.
I don't want to presume.
Do you mind if I inquire?
Do tell me to stop if you don't want to ask questions. In October 2008, you lost your Paul Smith brown leather jacket. And did you ever find it again? you left it on the train.
Did I tweet about that?
No.
How do you know?
I see. My research goes deeper than you
might tell you that.
No. It was in an independent interview. You just lost it at the time, and you said, I'm hoping it'll turn up in lost property.
It didn't.
No.
Well, that was just... what was really annoying about that as well? I got off the... I find it really annoying when I do something a bit stupid, and then all the infrastructure that surrounds me trying to go back and redress this stupid thing I've done, it turns out everyone else is more stupid than I am. So, I got off a train and realised instantly I'd left my jacket on the train, but I couldn't get back to the train. I had to go to an office and go, it's on that train. And they go, which train? And it's, I'm describing where I've come in from. And they go, well, what platform is that? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. Surely you know what platform that train is. No. So, and it just became this thing of, there was no way. I realised, I was through the ticket barrier, and I was still in the station. I go, oh shit, I've had my jacket on the train. And the method of me getting back to the train to retrieve my jacket was broken. There was no way to do it. So that's gone. What happened there. Not everything can be gold in this.
No, it doesn't have to. It's just interesting that mystery has been solved.
In all fairness.
Well,
that,
not really, is
it? I don't really miss that jacket. That jacket, do you know what the problem with that jacket is? It was a leather jacket. It wasn't aging.
No.
It was when I got it, I went, well, I'll grow into it. It'll start to get more creased and wear a bit of wear off. Never did.
All right.
After a while, I was like, eventually I'm going to have to ask somebody to tie me to the back of a car and drag me while I wear this jacket in order for it to look just a bit weathered.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't do it.
But there comes a point as well where a man is too old to wear a leather jacket, do you not think? I mean, not 10 years ago, but now, do you not think we're too... I used to wear leather jacket. I used to wear not a zip-up leather jacket, but a... back to when I was about 40.
What?
I did have it was like I really liked it. It was like a tan buttoned.
Okay, all right.
It was tan. Very nice, but I don't think I could wear it now. I think once you get, and even that wasn't like a racy leather jacket. But I think you get older, and then it's a bit.
At what
midlife
age do you
crisis.
Stop using the word racy? That's a more pertinent point here. And what kind of a jacket does one consider racy? See, racy, I think, stockings and suspenders.
But you know,
racy with a band who sang "Some Girls." That's a very problematic song. Now, have you heard? Do you remember that song? Some girls will, some girls won't. Some girls need a lot of loving and some girls don't.
Yeah.
I know I've got the feeling, but I don't know why. And here's the killer line. Some say they will and some girls lie. That is not okay. And that song is... there's a lot of songs now. I remember when there was that whole thing about the... I know you want it. Blurred lines. And I thought, there's nothing in that that's as bad as some songs that we still play. Like, people still get up. I've seen, fucking proper politically correct lefty people dancing around to Jump Around by House of Pain.
Right.
And are singing along. If your girl steps up, I'm smacking the hoe. This is not all right. This is not okay. And yet we're fucking losing our mind over, I know you want it. Is anyone with me on this? Am I alone? And
thank heaven for little girls.
Fuck me.
I mean, fuck me as in yes.
Absolutely. Let's not quote me out of context here.
But so you and Dara are very good friends. You've been each other's best men.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been best man at each other's weddings. Which is the same fact, but I just said it better than you.
You're the best man.
It's funny, I was at a wedding with my wife once, and the best man was a lawyer, and he gave a really good speech. And afterwards, my wife goes, yeah, that'd be great. Wouldn't it be great? Like, to be, oh, it was the end of the night, wouldn't it be great if you were like, if your best friend was a lawyer? Because he'd give a really good best man speech, wouldn't he? And I went, yeah. Or if your best friend was like, a really fucking famous stand-up comedian. That'd be pretty fucking handy to have at your wedding. What the fuck is wrong with you? Sorry, Dara, I mean, that was very good, but we'd really have rounded a lawyer. He would have gotten less laughs, but made more points of information.
So how did you meet Dara early on when, as a stand-up?
We met, he was my, he opened for me. He was my support act at a gig in Dublin. And then we just got on famously because we instantly started bitching about everybody else on the Irish comedy circuit. and when he would come over and he would do sort of hit and runs on the London scene, he would stay with me. And right. I remember distinctly one night in Muswell Hill, in my on having been and to just buy stuff, whatever, food, at the shop. The little details of the story that really make it. And we're walking back down the road to my house, and this woman just outside the shop just recognised me. She's like, oh my God, you're Ed Byrne. She didn't even say you're that guy. She said, you're Ed Byrne. Proper fucking recognition, right? And and just completely blanked Dara. That was the moment he was determined he was going to be famous. I am sure. Every time you see him on TV now, he's just trying to race further and further away from that moment where I was recognised and he wasn't.
My first time I met him, he said to me, oh, I met him in, think, like 2001 in Edinburgh. So nice to meet you. He said, you wrote a blog about me it was before I even wrote a blog. Is I'd done a blog of one of the Lee and Herring tours, like just for our website. And at night after the tour, I used to just watch the cable TV in the hotels, and I got obsessed with watching Don't Feed the Gondolas.
Yeah, it was. Can I explain? There was the sort of Irish equivalent of Have I Got News for You? It was called Don't Feed the Gondolas, and the reason it got that name is because there was a town council where they were trying to decide on ways to attract people into the town centre, and one of the suggestions was that they put gondolas on the local lake, and one of the town councillors said, well, that's all very well, but who's going to feed them? That's a true story. So that's why that show was called Don't Feed the Gondolas.
But I just wrote about how it was a terrible version of I Got News for You, and how the bloke on it kept on going all the time, and when he did a joke. Right. So Dara didn't like me for that straight away. He said I was.
So you basically you said something quite mean about him, and he didn't like it. Yeah.
He took it quite well.
Funny how people can be like.
So that's why I ended up going around the world with him, because of basic error.
I still haven't told him that my wife wished we had a lawyer at my wedding instead of him.
You watch the show.
Well, I know how he would react.
So we've probably going to have to stop because, you know, it's been time has flown by. But I'm going to ask you one more.
Yes,
we've done over an hour already. It's incredible. It's flown by, hasn't it? He's all right, isn't he? He can talk, can he?
I think that's the first time I've heard that said in a complimentary way. Normally we would say, you can talk. It's a bit snidey.
Yeah. What is the strangest thing you've ever found in the embers of a bonfire? This is what we're going to end on. So let's hope you've got something good.
Oh, my goodness me. We have bonfires quite regularly at my house because we don't have neighbours, so we're able to.
Yeah. I bet there's something. I don't think I've said this on the main podcast. Maybe I have, but I found my first cat, the first cat we had in our family in the embers of a bonfire. Didn't live for long. It is sad and horrific. Every time you stroked, no, it was just slightly burnt.
Presumably, you hadn't thrown the cat on the bonfire.
No, it was gone to sleep. It was bonfire night, and the. Do you have that in Ireland?
I don't understand that. Yeah, we have. Well, in Ireland, we do bonfire. We light a bonfire at Halloween.
Right.
So the bonfire night and Halloween are all done on the one night.
Okay.
We don't have a separate thing with the whole house apart because that's not a thing.
But we do it then.
But being Irish, the fireworks and bonfires go on for a good week before and after. You know, yes. So there's still generally a lot of bangers going off. I had something for a second, yeah. And then I started talking, and now I lost it.
Usually, it's a great way to find some incredible childhood memory of something awful that's been destroyed in a fire. Just don't want to put the pressure on.
I've got. It's weird because, as I say, I love a bonfire, but I've got nothing.
I just found a piece of paper in my notebook. It's in my writing. It's just been a ripped paper. It says, "This is childish. Brexit." Comma division. Wonder what that was about.
I remembered it.
Yeah, go on.
The whole thing about hedgehogs. Say, and now your cat as well.
Yeah.
Like if you build a bonfire, what you should then do is pick the bonfire up and move it somewhere else.
Okay.
You know, because in case there's any hedgehogs in it.
Wallace.
But I think anything that's in it, because bonfires are not like difficult to get out of. I think if you start to get hot and can't climb out of the thing that's hot,
yeah,
you deserve to die. I think hedgehogs that die in bonfires,
yeah,
fuck them, you know. And your cat
didn't die though.
Your cat's a fucking idiot cat.
It was a little kitten. He was like,
I think I'm in a thing and it's on fire.
Don't you dare come here and talk about it.
You fucking burned it alive. Don't tell me.
Which is worse,
slagging it off or you burning it alive?
It crawled into the fire after it had been, I imagine.
It's probably so dumb it crawled into the fire while it was on fire. Ooh, that's warm.
He's dead.
It's a bit too warm, but I'll give it a go and see if it'll get cooler.
He's dead.
Oh, I'm dead. Like, that's to me what I think happens to hedgehogs and cats. The dying bonfire.
He died the first time I left home. He died while I was away when I was 18. He lived from when I was 4 till when I was 18, and then when I went away, and then he died while I was away. And you just desecrated his memory by saying he was, he was a cat. He wasn't that intelligent.
Can I just say, as stories go, that wasn't a big reveal at the end. And then it turned, and as it happens, he was a cat. Not a good, you know. Like, if at the end of Sixth Sense, it had been, and then it turned out Bruce Willis was a child psychologist. That's not a good ending to the story.
I'm not very good at those, and then I got off the bus jokes. And it turned out at the end, he was a cat. It was all the time he was a cat. All the way through.
All the time, Bruce Willis just wanted to help the child.
Right, well, I'm disappointed. The bonfire story has gone so bad.
I got a punchline there, and you went back to the fucking bonfire.
Left a very bad taste in the mouth at the end of what was up until then an enjoyable podcast. It's been ruined. You've ruined this for me. Not just this one. All the 148 other ones before.
I have shat on your entire career now. By not having a good bonfire.
Bonfire!
How fucking contrived and niche is that question that you would hang everything on it? Have you ever found anything interesting in a... No! Because no one has except you, and even your story's fucking depressing.
Someone found a clock in it, someone found... Adam Buxton found burnt pictures of his children. It was an amazing question. In the right hands, it's an amazing... Amazing question.
Some of my wife's university notes didn't burn well enough. Is that true?
That's good.
She burnt her freaking thesis.
Why did she do that?
What? Because it's literally the size of that table taking up space in the house. Fucking pointless.
Why burn
it? She put it on the
bike. Why burn it? We're not recycling it.
It was no kind of, this is our way of freeing ourselves from the concept of education. She just. I don't need this anymore. Put that on the bonfire.
Burning it, that's an extreme
way. It didn't because it's paper, it was all compact. Yeah. And, you know, so I found one. Yeah, you could still resubmit this and you could get notes on it.
And so they'd go, why did you burn it? Why didn't you recycle it? What's going on? Why do you hate education so much? That's... See, that's interesting. That's a psychological drama there.
I've done everything I can with this fucking bonfire.
We're getting somewhere with it now.
People are like, let's have an interval and then Sarah passed.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Edmund! You have been listening to Rich Terring's Death Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich Terring, and my guest, Ed Byrne. The music that you listen to during this bit is by a band called Pest. Why not check them out? They're probably on iTunes, I reckon. They probably do some other songs. This might just be their only one. Thank you very much to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at Go Fast Strike. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide. You are all legends. Thank you to my producer, Ash Caffrey. And this is a Go Fast Strike. It is a fuzz. It is a Sky Potato production. Thank you for listening. By emergency questions, gofasterstrike.com/EQ.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.